Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have a special guest with us. She was Jenny Anydots in the 2016 Broadway revival of Cats. Welcome, Eloise Kropp, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Yes, we're excited to have you. I'm very excited because I think your character has a lot of depth that I want to dig into, and I would love to hear from your experience playing that character. But before we get into that, I want to know, early on, when you were starting to take on this role, you were thinking about it and you were going to audition for it, how much Cats knowledge did you have going in? Are you one of the theater members who knew about it, saw it as a kid, kind of was all in on it, or were you the one who had no idea?
So I had done a production of Cats when I was in seventh grade, but it was like the smallest version of Cats ever. It was like the opening number, it was the Rum Tum Tugger, it was Memory, and it was like the end. So
that's
I
it.
Like didn't, that was it. So I thought it was like a one act show that was like, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and had like four or five cat characters. So that's like what I thought Cats was.
So that's interesting. So how did they pick those two songs? Like, how did they pick Rum Tum Tugger? And I mean, I guess you have to pick Memory.
Yeah, I think like it was, maybe there was one more in there. Maybe Skimbleshanks was in there, if I'm remembering correctly. But it was like, there was no Jellicle Ball. There was no, like, truly it was just like song, 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 Memory, the end.
That sounds like kind of an interesting production.
Yeah, so I had no context of what Cats was, like, going into the audition. And I just knew that everyone was auditioning for it. And I knew that my mom had told me, like, when I first moved to New York, she was like, you can do, like, any show you want, and I will be so, so excited for you. But, like, please don't ever be in Cats.
Wow. Just right away. Just that's right the away. One show.
Like,
not
that
to
was
do.
The one show. She was like, please don't be in Cats because it freaks me out. And I was like, oh, okay. So then
and
I like was auditioning.
Listen.
Yeah, no, I was auditioning for it. And I went in for like every single cat possible. So I had no idea like who I was going to be. Like for a bit, I was like, I'm going to be a swing. I have no idea because I was going in for every cat because I was initially called in for Rumpelteazer.
Okay.
And then I was like auditioned for every other cat. And then finally, the last cat I went in for was Jenny Anydots.
So did your mom like your seventh grade production?
We never talked about it. I played the Rum Tum Tugger. I played the Rum Tum Tugger in the seventh grade production.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you got to.
I took the whole thing up the octave. Like it was, it's pretty much amazing.
Did you like that is an aggressive dance for a seventh grader. Did you really get after it as a rock star in your production?
Absolutely. All like 4'5" of me was like whipping my tail around and making all these other cats dance around me. And
that is incredible.
It was amazing.
Had you seen it before the seventh grade production?
No.
Okay. So you went in cold. You weren't given a lot of direction probably as a seventh grader besides rock star.
No, it was like, this is the Rum Tum Tugger. He's like a rock star cat. And I was like, oh, cool. And then I like started seeing the show, or started like in the audition process. And then I was like, I should probably watch this show. And like, I remember sitting down and watching it and like looking at my friend and being like, wait, this is a whole two acts. Like, this is a whole thing. Like, who are all these characters? What are they? Like, I'm so, what is happening? I was like, Cats is one act. It's like 45 minutes. And he was like, no, it's like 2.5 hours.
In seventh grade, it's one act. That's because that's all your parents could take.
In seventh grade, it was one act. But in real life, I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah, they kind of have to cut some too anyways. When you've got McCavity in an abusive relationship, the Joker Ball is basically an orgy. Like, there's some stuff that's probably not seventh grade appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely not. So it was smart that they cut it, but I just felt very sheltered for a long time until I actually found out that it was a whole thing.
I would love to hear from the director of your seventh grade production and know how they chose just those characters. Like, was it based off of that's the songs they liked? Or like, you know, you could easily put a Mungo Jerry and Rebel teaser in there. That would be get more people on stage. Like, how did they come to the conclusion of just these couple songs?
I have no idea. I think he just is like, I'm sure it was a thing. My guess would be that he's like picked songs that he knew the students could do. And then was like, these are the songs we'll do.
Okay. I could see that. I'm trying to think if there's any song that's would have been easier. I don't know. I mean, the tap dance number would be hard with your character. Christopher Jones is pretty simple.
Yeah, we didn't do that one.
So you go from seventh grade of a one act show to auditioning, and you said you watched the movie, and that's kind of where you broke down and understood what was really going on.
Kind of. I mean, I was still super confused, and at that point, I was going in for so many different cats that I was like trying to grasp like at straws. And then I had actually told Leslie Margarita like before I knew anything about Cats, because we had done Dames at Sea together, and she was like, oh, they're doing Cats on Broadway. And I was like, oh my God, you'd probably be, there's like that tap dance cat. You'd be amazing, Leslie. Because I knew that cat was like older. And I was like, oh my God, you need to be going in for Jenny. And she was like, she laughed at me and was like, ha 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 ha. So then the running joke was like, when I got it, she was like, ha 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 ha. Like, you call me old. And now you're old.
And you got the role. So when you got the role, how much direction was given to you on, I mean, again, you thought it was a one act show. Like, how much direction was told to you on the backstory of what this is about?
I mean, we like sat the first day and like read the poems with Trevor Nunn. That was like 8 hours of us sitting in a circle. And he read us like all the poems and told us a bunch of like backstory of how the show was created. It wasn't necessarily a lot about like each individual character. And then the next day was like the day where we crawled around on our hands and our knees for like 8 hours. And they would give us like words that sort of were like the essence of our characters, like broad words. So like one of my words was like motherly. And you know what I mean? So they were things like this. But that was like kind of it. There really wasn't, or they would be like, my favorite was, Jenny wouldn't do that. Or like you would like do something with your cat and they'd be like, no, Jenny wouldn't do that.
What would be an example?
Well, there was this part that me and Jeremy were doing, cause he played Skimble. So we spent a lot of the show together because Jenny and Skimble are like kind of naughty together. But, so we like did this part in this one moment that was like choreography. And I just distinctly remember like Andy kept us in it for a long time because we were good at it. We like, it was like you went into a cartwheel and he like assisted me like in this cartwheel in slow motion and like set me down. And then like Grisabella entered for the first time and this, that, the other, blah, 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 blah. But it was like a lot of people were doing it and he wanted to like create like this visual effect with bodies. But the London team had like this whole thing. They were like, well, Jenny and Skimble wouldn't do that. Jenny and Skimble wouldn't do that. Like, then it's just like, why? Like, what are these rules?
So it was more of like certain scenarios that just like, there's no way your character would be in that situation.
Yeah. So then a lot of the show, what was really funny is like, I got to create a lot of my show because I got like a lot of freedom. There would be like a lot of times where I think they either forgot about me or like, if you weren't in like the front of the choreography that they were setting that day, you just kind of were like fending for yourself as like in the background of the junkyard.
And that's where you needed to make sure you were doing stuff Jenny would do.
Yeah. And that's where I made sure that I was like doing Jenny stuff.
So what, how would you describe Jenny stuff? Like what is your backstory for Jenny?
I mean, Jenny is definitely the motherly cat. I like spent a lot of time with Electra, Syllabub, and Pounceable, which are like the three kittens. I think that Jenny just, she has this, she kind of like keeps everyone together in the clan, in the tribe. You know what I mean? She's very much like, I think one of the things that was always so like thematic for me was the fact that like Jenny's number was first and really like set the show and like set the stakes of the night. And I think Jenny always knew, I always knew I wasn't going to win, even though I wanted to win, but I knew that like I was setting the stage for everyone else and like setting the bar per se. But I think like my job as Jenny was like, I really did like coerce the kittens a lot in my, a lot of my track I created to like make sure that like every moment I knew exactly where those kittens were and knew where like threats were. And then the moment that I really got to like let go and let loose was during the Jellicle Ball. That was the moment where I really got to sort of like let go of this motherly instinct, let go of this like need to protect and take care of and just be like Jenny, you know, Jenny from the block, like chilling out and having a fun time.
Yeah. So the, it's interesting you kind of, you say that. So, cause I thought when you're, you going first is a disadvantage in any competition show, you know, it's not good to be at the beginning of America's Got Talent episode. You want to, you want to be at the end, you know, that's when the best scenario. So you were stacked against your chance of winning.
Absolutely.
But you should have been more in the running as the mother, as kind of at the, you know, in the age group of the different cats, you're in the group that should be more likely to be winning. So it's interesting to hear you say that you just knew you weren't going to win.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to win, obviously, but I knew as Jenny, I knew I was too important to go yet.
Interesting. So I had responsibilities. Yeah, you can't leave.
I couldn't leave. I had responsibilities.
So why does your character nap then? Most of the day.
Because most of the day is when everyone else is awake. And at night is when everyone's asleep. So that's when they need someone to be awake for them and protect. Mm,
okay. So that's your protector. You're protecting at night when they're all asleep and you're teaching mice to make scarves and cockroaches to tap dance.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like, that's all I took away from the song.
Yeah, like Jenny, if Jenny was a house cat, because there's like lots of controversy about whether if Jenny was a house cat or not, there's like a lot of like backstory, but I never had a collar. So I don't think Jenny is a house cat.
The Wikipedia fan page has you as a owned by the landlord and an indoor cat.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like I didn't have a collar. So unless like my owner just was a bad owner and didn't put a collar on me, then
part of the rationale, I think, is the having the fur, the additional, like your quick change halfway through the dance. And so I think that's part of the reason, or at least the rationale.
Right.
There's a lot of plot holes. So it's like, we can't really fix them all.
No, but I made Jenny like, you know, I think she's one of those crazy cats that during the day you're like, my cat is so calm. All she does is sleep. And then at night she's that crazy cat that like bugs the shit out of you and doesn't go to sleep at night. Like, is a nocturnal, you know, those cats that are like jumping up on the window and like, you know, scratching the blinds and like doing all the annoying things, but like only at night.
And you're not just doing that. You're tap dancing through the night to keep everyone awake.
To keep everyone awake.
So when you got the role and you're watching the movie, did you go, oh, my mom's right. I'm about to do a tap dance number with 15 cockroaches tap dancing behind me.
Well, I knew that it wasn't going to be cockroaches because Andy was like, we're not doing cockroaches. So we did mice.
Okay.
We had like the little mice. And
so,
like,
so much better.
Yeah. And there was like a moment where the boys came on and they had the little like cockroachy outfit, but no one else put like those on because he was like insistent. He was like, I hate that they all are cockroaches. It doesn't make any sense. I don't like it. This, that, the other.
Okay. So you had the other fearful roommate in New York, instead of cockroaches, you had the mice behind you.
Yeah.
What was going through your head when you realized that you're going to get to do this like incredible number front and center tap dancing and you're going to have a bunch of mice behind you doing it with you?
I mean, I don't think I really processed it like that. I don't know. I think I was sort of like, oh, we get to do this number. But with that number, as we were developing it, like we changed it a lot from the original. I don't know if you remember, like, we had like the mop that I sat on and they like ran it around the stage and then there were like balls and then there was the clock. And then, so it became more of this idea of like Jenny dancing and having to get everything done against the clock as opposed to like her teaching the cockroaches being the whole number. So there was just like a lot of busy stuff. So that stressed me out because I'm not a huge prop person. So all of a sudden I'm like in this number tapping, but also like having to deal with all these props, which for me was like sometimes my worst nightmare.
And did you, when you first saw that and you're like, I don't want to, you know, God, this is going to be much harder. Did you go, Jenny wouldn't do that. Jenny wouldn't play with props.
I should have. That would have been funny. No, I didn't. I was like, no. Yes.
Yeah. What do you mean? Okay.
Right.
So when you, okay, let's change gears then. Because I think I've had, since I preparing for today, I've had your song stuck in my head for like a week. But I want to talk about, you said that you're with Skimba most of the time, but there's a lot of rumor mill on the Cats family tree. It's, in my opinion, a bunch of dotted lines. There's a few other people that have done more research on it than I have, but there's some thoughts that you might be more related to Old Deuteronomy or Bustopher or Gus, which I think is just picking the age demographics for you, for your character, and that you might be Grizabella's sister. So did you think about those things?
I did. So I didn't think that I was Grizabella's sister. I definitely thought that we had a connection, like a relationship growing up. And that we used to be friends and then she betrayed us and then we were no longer friends. Because in all of the scenes where Grizabella came onto the stage, I was one of the first people to react to get her away, to shoo her away.
Interesting.
And it was always set up like stage-wise. I was closest to her initially, or I would watch her like go away and I would be the first one to kind of like shoo her away. So I never thought of her as my sister, but I did think of her as a friend who we used to be friends.
But you must have thought of her as a threat, and that's part of why you're shooing her away, because you're protecting everyone.
Yeah. I didn't want her. She betrayed us. And as easily as that, and like when, you know, you're looking for reason and moments, you go with the most powerful moment. And it's like, she betrayed us. She no longer belongs. She cannot be here.
And you're the protector of the kittens. So you are the first one saying, get out.
Yeah.
Poetic.
And at the end of the show, I was one of the last people to accept the fact that she was going to the Heaviside Lair. Mm. It took me a long time.
Because you wanted to win.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to be the cat that gets murdered?
I mean, Cats to me, this is like totally changing the subject, but Cats to me is a chorus line with cats.
Okay. I've not thought of it that way. That's an interesting version of it. I think of it as America's Got Talent or The X Factor or any of those competition shows. And I think part of that is because I saw Leona Lewis, who was on one of those shows. Yes. And that was the first person. So I was like, oh yeah, this each person sings, someone wins. And she won. And so that was kind of like my perception. And as I've watched it more and more, it's now a dark, dark version of that, where it's a slightly sexually charged competition show with a murder at the end.
I don't know. Go back and watch it thinking of it as a Chorus Line. The setup as the show of the show, like the way it's set up, is so similar to a Chorus Line. It's almost creepy.
I'll have to. Okay. I'll have to watch it. I've not watched in that fashion. I don't know how many more times I can mentally
watch it.
Watching it. So I'll have to find a way to do that. I'll have to refresh on Chorus Line too.
You just think like people, you know, the opening number is very like everyone dancing together, like the opening number of a Chorus Line. Then we have like these individual numbers where people are like showing who they are and like proving themselves. And then we have like the big Jellicle Ball moment, which is super similar to like the montage of like, hello, you know, all that stuff in a Chorus Line. And then you have like more individual numbers getting to know people and getting to know Grisabella, which should be like Cassie. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of similarities.
Okay. I like the thought. I mean, my Broadway knowledge is so limited. Right. That I'm tying it more to pop culture and other things that I'm more aware of than I am to the, you know, a Chorus Line or other shows like that. But that's an interesting take. And I will dig into it because I'm now curious.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the different songs. So I'm fascinated by that you only knew a couple of them until you auditioned because of your one act version in the seventh grade. But if you were not playing Jenny and you got to sing, dance, take another character's kind of arc, who would you want to take?
Probably either Demeter or Rumpelteazer.
Why those two?
I mean, I think like Rumpelteazer is just so like, she's such like a little rebel. Like she doesn't really like, she's just kind of like a little jerk. Like you're like all the things that she does, it's kind of like, nee, 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 like a little teasy. And I think that would just be super fun. Like Mungo Jerry to me is a little bit more level headed, at least the way that like Jess played it. Whereas Rumpelteazer got to just be a little bit more kooky and crazy and spastic. And I like always thought that'd be super, super fun. And then, I mean, I think Demeter, just because who doesn't want to be like a scaredy, sexy cat with like a lot of backstory?
Those are an interesting two, because when I first saw the show, the only song I sang for like the next week was Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer. And as I've done this podcast, the one I sing and like think about most often is McCavity.
Right.
Because that's the most interesting song now.
Yeah. Or I would want to be like a guy part. Do you know what I mean? Like I would either want to be like those two women, or I would want to be like a guy part.
Which guy part would be your number one?
I mean, I think being like the bust for Gus Chuck would be amazing.
And then you get to be Peter.
And then you get to be Peter, Filthy Peter.
Who does not exist in any other production I've found out besides yours.
Hey, I think they were like, Peter, what name? Because at first when we did the whole naming of cats with like Andy reinvented it. Did anybody ever talk about this?
No, I've not heard
that. We reinvented it. So we all like spoke individual lines and like this, that, the other. And at one moment, these like people were like saying their names as they like walked out of line. And Chris Gurr said Peter.
Yeah, and I think it's in the naming. The name's in the poem.
And that's how it stuck. I think that's like literally how they decided it was Peter. Yeah.
That's the only reason. It's been a running pet peeve of mine of this entire show is that you get all these amazing names and you got Peter.
Yeah.
But that's
Bill Bailey.
Bill Bailey. There's a couple, but Peter just is like, it's just out there.
Yeah,
especially for the show. Okay, so I want to ask a similar question, but a different way. Have you ever heard about Cat's Tumblr?
Cat's Tumblr, no.
Okay, I did not either until my last guest, who is a super fan, who educated me on this, and it is essentially a group of super fans who all interact with each other as if they are the character and end up in scenes together. So, obviously can go. Yeah, and they're very, it can go a lot of ways. It's, there are a lot of like fun situations where they just essentially say, what would, to your point, Jenny wouldn't do that. It's that type of thing. What would Jenny do in that situation? So if you were going to take over a Cat's Tumblr character and get to interact in normal scenes of today or just they might, I am a little fearful. And why I will not participate is I think that their scenes might get a little, promiscuous is I think the nice way of saying it, but
I'm sure.
But if you were just in a normal scene, let's just say there you run into another cat at a grocery store or just something's happening, you're on the subway together, which cat would you want to be a Tumblr owner for?
I mean Jenny, 100%.
Stick to Jenny because you already know what she doesn't do.
I already know a lot about Jenny and I grew to love her character. Like at first I had like a midlife crisis because I was 24 when I got the role and I was like so confused. I was like, I'm way too young for this. I don't understand why I'm this part, like this, that, the other. And I actually like it really grew into the character and like grew to love her and her like weird quirks and I don't know. I just felt like it was a super fun kind of type of personality because she has so much depth and so much level. Like, yes, she is the mom cat, but she's kind of a cool mom.
Yeah. I agree. I think Jenny would be a really fun one because you get to play protector in a lot of situations. And you also, you have like an army behind you of mice and cockroaches, which in New York City in those situations would be powerful.
Yeah. And if you think about it, if you break it down, there's really not a lot of cats in the show who don't like Jenny.
That's true. That is very true.
Everyone really likes Jenny. And so there was no cats that I was like, I didn't like Tugger, but that was because I liked Tugger.
Yeah. Of course. Who doesn't like Tugger? That's part of it.
It was like, I shouldn't like Tugger because this is a bad example, but like, come on.
So taking Jenny out of the equation now, what cat would you want to be quarantined with?
What cat would I want to be quarantined with?
Yeah, if you had to be quarantined with one of the characters, which not actors, characters. Which cat would you want to be quarantined with?
Not Munkastrap.
Rank them here. That'd be even better. Okay, who's the absolute no way you don't want to be at all involved with them? And then who's like, all right, I consider it. And then you're number one.
I wouldn't do Munkastrap just because, like, he was always sort of preachy and annoying to me.
Narrating your day.
Yeah, like come on, we can talk. And he just had a little bit of air of he felt better than everybody else, and I don't know. I wouldn't want to be quarantined with him. He's a little too high strung. He needs a little bit, like, he needs stroking of the ego, and Jenny's not going to do that.
Is he your number one no? Or is somebody, I mean, you've got to have McCavity lower, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be quarantined with McCavity. Although, McCavity might, like, surprise everyone and be, like, someone who's super awesome to quarantine with. He might manipulate you. And, you know, after quarantine, you'd be like, I definitely was manipulated. But in the actual events, you might have fun. I mean, if I had to do, like, friend-wise, I would probably say, like, Jelly Lorem, because we were always good friends in the show. Mm-hmm. So we would have a fun time quarantining together.
What about non-friend? Like, what if it's just, like, you know, the dream scenario? You just, you know, you're going to get stuck. Who are you picking?
Let me see. I'm trying to think of who I would pick. Non-actual show scenario. I'm trying to think of what Ahmad's cat's name was. Alonzo. I would choose Alonzo.
Alonzo.
Yeah. I would choose Alonzo.
That's an interesting choice.
He's second in command from Monkstrap. But I feel like his overall character is pretty grounded, and that would be, like, a fun person to be in quarantine with.
I said last time I asked this question, I said Mr. Mistopheles, because you get magic, you get a bundle of fun, a lot of entertainment. But I'm leaning towards Buster for Jones now, because I think we'd eat well.
That's
we'd
true.
Be pretty low maintenance. We'd probably be at like a country club situation, so I can maybe golf. Like, I feel like that's the life we'd be living.
But don't you worry that, like, Bustopher Jones would just, like, sleep and, like, eat too much and sleep all the time, and then, like, you actually wouldn't really have, like, a quarantine buddy. You'd have just, like, this fat cat who ate too much all the time and is just sleeping.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally fair, but isn't that what most of us have been doing in quarantine anyways? Like, I can watch Netflix with him asleep next, you know, on the couch next to you.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, there's no right answer, but there's definitely some wrong answers, I think. That's kind of what it boils down to.
I mean, if you were to choose, like, Carbuckety, come on, that'd be a stupid choice. Even Mungo Jerry and Rebel Teaser, no, come on.
They'll steal everything from you.
They'll steal everything from you. You don't want to be quarantined with them. I mean, Old Deuteronomy could be a good choice.
Yeah, I would feel being – I feel like I'd be judged the whole time, though.
Really?
I mean, that's his job. Like, he is the decision maker. I feel like every – you know, everything I'd be doing would be being graded for if I can get, you know, to the heaviside layer.
Yeah, I guess, though, like, I don't know. You hadn't ever, like, experienced the, like – Old Deuteronomy, like, he's just non-judgmental, like, he's making the choice, but I believe it's not really him making the choice. He's just connecting with, like, the universal energy from above to gain the choice.
Ooh, so that's a very interesting way to look at it, because then that would be why he's not even in the running.
Yeah,
which I think he should be in the running,
but he's not. He can't be. I think he already was in the running in the past and, like, got rebirthed, and now he was rebirthed for the final time as Deuteronomy. And they were like, your rebirth is to help us make this choice.
That's very likely and makes a ton of sense. And I think that's the beauty of this show, is that there's no rhyme or reason or answer to any of these questions.
Right. There's no right answer, but that's always how I felt. Like, I never felt judged by Deuteronomy. I always felt, I mean, it was always the feeling of, like, a warm hug. Like, he was your father in a sense. He was everyone's father. He was never like, and he was trying to get us all to make the kind, right choice, which in the end wasn't competing against each other. In the end, it was all us deciding who really needed to be rebirthed the most.
When I watched the show, before I researched the show, when I saw the show, and again, I had no idea, walked out, still didn't know what was going on. The only thing I remember as character is he sat on stage during intermission. And that, like, blew my mind. that that they like an actor would be willing to do that. You know, like they would be say, sure, I'll give up this 15 minutes. But then two of like, it took me about a good couple minutes to realize that it wasn't a prop, that it was an actual human.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden people started going out there and taking selfies. And so that was like all I really remember from the character. So it's interesting to hear like a warm hug and kind of like all this like godly features of it. Cause it's like the, if you just see the show, you're going to remember memory and probably a couple of the crazy dance numbers, Jenny's, like yours, Jenny's number. Dance number, Tugger running in the crowd. Well, I mean, I remembered your, I remember that. I remember Tugger coming into the crowd. I remember, Mungo Jerry and Rumpel Teaser because of, you know, the just songs stuck in my head. And then,
oh my gosh, yeah.
And then honestly, a lot of the rest, I vividly remember Skimbleshanks because when they, when you built the train, the light that you decided to flash into the crowd blinded me from where I was sitting. So I was like,
that
oh
was
yeah.
Mistopheles. That was Mistopheles who held the light. That was
Well, I have a grave to pick because I was, I remember I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I couldn't see it again.
And you're
I was blind. And the cat eyes part, the green eyes thing in the beginning. That was like my entire memory of the show. The first time I saw it.
Thankfully, I didn't have to do green eyes. And I was always so happy.
You are lucky.
I didn't have to do it.
Tyler Hines says he got hit in the face.
Yeah. I like for some, I think it was because I was having a bad day. And Andy knew it. And so, like, this is exactly what happened. And I was like, thank you. I, like, went up to him after and I was like, thank you. Because my number during tech was just, like, a nightmare. Because the coat was, like, 20-something pounds and we didn't know it was going to be that heavy. My costume was 10. All the prop elements were, like, not working on the rake. And, like, it was just, like, so one thing after another. And I just remember, like, standing on stage, like, crying. Like, turning up stage being like, no one can see me cry. No one can see me cry. But, like, everything, like, felt like it was melting around me. Like, I was like, ah! And we were, like, setting up the green eyes part, like, right after that. And I remember Andy being like, we like about to take a break. And then they were like, we're going to come back and do green eyes. Andy was like, are you okay? And I was like, and then like left. Then I came back and they're like, all right, who starts in the house during like the opening number? Mm-hmm. And I don't remember who volunteered me. Someone was like, Eloise does. And I was like, yeah. And then everyone else like started volunteering and then Andy was like you and then literally like skipped me and was like not you. So I was like one of the only people who started in the house like to walk through the house during Jellicle like the opening who didn't do green eyes.
Wow.
And I was so thankful.
Can you imagine if you did green eyes in your seventh grade production?
Oh my goodness, no.
Would one of your parents like have a heart attack when you pop up next to them in the auditorium?
My mom would have screamed.
What did your mom think when did she come to see the show?
Oh yeah.
Of course. So what did she think when, you know, she told you to do anything but, and of course that's what you go do. What did she think of your production?
She actually like I distinctly remember like opening night she came and saw she came first preview and she knew that like you know we put up the show so fast like mm-hmm. 5 weeks of rehearsal, 2 weeks of tech, 2 weeks of previews, and then we were open. Like it was crazy fast.
Wow.
And it would have been fast to just set it was like if it was the original production, but this was a whole new reinvented version, so it was just, it was nuts. And I remember, I think it was first preview and like the crowd was really packed and she was like, wow, there are a lot of people here. And I remember her texting me being like, there are a lot of people here. It's like sold out. I was like, oh, wow. And after the show, she was like, I actually like really liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to. So like for me.
That's like such a backhanded compliment. I was like, it was better than I expected it to be.
Well, I think she thought like she would just not like it or relate to it at all. And the fact that she was like, I was thoroughly entertained the entire time and I wasn't creeped out. And I thought it was like, she was like, I thought it was good, like really good. So I think her expectations were thinking that like she would hate it and she would like, you know, go out at intermission and not come back in.
Your main stuff's done. So
yeah,
and didn't head out.
Exactly. But she was like, I thought it was like super, super great. She really, really liked it. So I'll take it as a compliment.
That's awesome. I'm glad she went in with a low bar. I went in with no bar because I had no idea what I was going in to see. Here's the million-dollar question now. So this is my entire podcast has been debating and arguing why Grizabella is not the right choice at the end of the show. Okay. So do you agree with me that Grizabella is not the right choice? Or do you want to defend Grizabella? And if you don't want to defend Grizabella, who should die at the end of the show?
Do I think Grizabella is the right choice? It's like 50-50. Do I think you could have picked another cat? Absolutely. I think you could have picked another cat. I mean, Gus could have been picked. I also think Demeter could have been picked.
Ooh, Demeter. No one's argued Demeter that I think of. A lot of people argue. There's a big Team Gus following out there.
Well, of course. Gus, we love Team Gus.
So argue Demeter's case.
So I think Demeter just has a lot of demons. Demeter has a lot of issues, and I think she has done wrong. And I think she is haunted by her past with all the McCavity stuff and getting involved with that. And I think that she potentially could go and be reborn and be freed of that past.
That's a very different way than I've thought about it. So I like hearing that, because you're saying that's like the person who should die at the end is someone who has the demons who will benefit from being reborn. And I've said this is a competition, so who's got the best dance, song and dance? That's how I've analyzed this. Very deep, very, very deep like analysis of the show.
I mean, if it's about best song and dance, Jenny. But if we're like breaking into like the story of who really needs help and who could really benefit from being reborn, I think Demeter's a good choice.
Is Demeter too young?
No.
No. Great. I love it. Stick to it. It's one of my favorite songs now, is her song.
That song is Bomb Ballerina.
Yeah.
So good. So good. Oh.
That's an interesting take. I've not thought about it from that perspective. Chris Gurr said that he didn't think Gus had another life to live. So I thought that was very poetic of him, but also like, that's why he thought no for Team Gus.
Mm.
But I think, you know, it should be Rum Tug Tugger and Mr. Mustafa's going up together.
Why Rum Tug Tugger?
When you talk about performances, I think the two of them have some showstoppers. And then I like the fact that the entire fan world thinks that they are together secretly. So I think that they should be a little kind of Bert and Ernie scenario and head up to the Heaviside Layer together.
I mean, I like that. I just don't think Mistopheles is like too useful. They would never pick him. His magic and his like, all the things he can do, there's no way he'd be reborn until he like is about to die.
That's true, but how many times has a magician won America's Got Talent? Like, this is a showstopper here. Like, again, this, and I'm taking this from one literal angle, so that's why I know that this is a flawed way to analyze this
to musical. Analyze it.
So I love hearing you say that, like, you're picking Demeter for like a very thoughtful, real reason, instead of like, oh yeah, it's like if it was America's Got Talent or The X Factor, like of course we'd pick Mistopheles.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the way his number is placed also is like a huge benefit. He's like the last big number in the show.
Yep. And so. Showstopper. Well, I mean, no memory is, but yeah.
Well, they're showstoppers in different ways.
True.
So
very true.
There's enough room for it all.
So this has been incredible. How can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram. It's my name, Eloise Kropp. And that's probably the only thing I'm really on these days. I'm not really on Twitter or Facebook anymore. So
I haven't taken up TikTok yet.
Haven't taken up TikTok yet. It feels like a lot of work, and I just don't know if I can commit.
I don't blame you. I am not on it either. Well, thank you again for joining me and sharing these very thoughtful ideas and ways to analyze the show again that I've never thought of. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts.
Of course. Thank you.
I do want to ask one more question before we go. If you now are doing your seventh grade production, what songs are you picking for your one act?
If I'm doing my seventh grade production?
Yeah, if you're now the director, you're only going to do one act. You're only going to pick like the couple songs. Pretend you've got the most talented kids in the world, so you can pick any of them. What's your order? What are you picking to tell a story in one act?
Opening, Rum Tum Tugger, Mungo Jerry and Rumpel Teaser, Snippets of the Jellicle Ball. I think Moments of Happiness is really important. I think Skimbleshanks and Mistopheles in the end, in memory.
That's basically the show. You cut yourself and Gus.
I cut myself. I cut Gus. I cut Gus.
Bustopher.
Bustopher, Gus, McCavity.
McCavity. Okay.
You know.
You cut all the old males.
Well, you know, if I'm assuming the demographic of my theater program is mainly women.
Okay, that's totally fair. No green eyes? Green eyes or no?
No green eyes.
Okay. I hope sometime at the end of your career when you've had a long, successful career, you go back and take on a music director at some school and you get to do a seventh grade version of Cats.
Of Cats.
That is my hope.
You know what? Never say never. Honestly, it'd be super fun.
I think your mom would be so proud.
My mom would. It might be her favorite thing I've ever done.
Well, thank you. Thank you again. This has been incredible.
Thank you.
So thanks for listening to this bonus episode with Eloise Kropp on The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere where you listen to podcasts. Please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.